Welcome to 30 Minutes of VOA Learning English, the Voice of America's information service for people learning English. Join us now for words and their stories and people in America, coming up after As It Is.
Hello and welcome to As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans in Washington. On our program today, we have two reports on agriculture. A new program in the state of Maryland is helping first-time farmers start their businesses. We will tell you more about the program later in the show. But first, our agriculture reporter, Milagro Sardin, tells how researchers are finding new ways to fight weeds.
Too much use of an important chemical can fuel the spread of new weeds. Some weeds are strong enough to resist weed-killing products, also known as herbicides. But researchers are finding natural ways to deal with unwanted plants. During the harvest at the United States Department of Agriculture's research station, just north of Washington, D.C., scientist Stephen Mirsky walks through a field of dry corn in search of enemies. The sight of some of those enemies causes him to cry out, "Look at the size of these pigweed plants right here." The plants are more than 2 meters tall. They have taken water, nutrients, and light from nearby crops. Pigweed can quickly get out of control. Each plant can produce up to 500,000 seeds. Many farmers control pigweed and other problem plants by growing genetically modified crops. Such crops do not react to the effects of a weed-killing product called Roundup. Farmers can treat their fields with Roundup and kill the weeds, but the chemical does not harm the crop. Stephen Mirsky, however, notes that some crops may be resisting the treatment.
That system works and it works well, but the repeated applications has the potential to cause resistance, and we're certainly seeing resistance on the rise throughout the country.
He says cotton growers in the southeastern U.S. have pigweed that resists Roundup. Stephen Mirsky and others are studying another possibility, controlling weeds with plants instead of chemical products. In autumn, they cover the ground with what farmers call a cover crop, like rye. Through the spring, they let it grow until it reaches a height of nearly 2 meters, but they do not harvest it. Instead, they roll it flat.
We can kill this cover crop without using any chemicals, and we can get a nice weed suppressive mulch.
He separates several centimeters of plant material to get to the cool earth.
And by keeping the ground cooler, it also inhibits the germination of weeds.
A machine cuts through the protective mat to plant the crop. It grows through the summer. Stephen Mirsky says rolling cover crops do more than just fight weeds. Plants that are pushed down in the spring break up and become rich soil. That means better harvests in the fall. Farmers across the country like the idea. Mr. Mirsky says it could greatly increase production of organic crops grown without the use of herbicides. He says the method will not work everywhere, but where it succeeds, it offers farmers a new tool to crush an old enemy. And that's the Agriculture Report from VOA Learning English. I'm Milagro Sardin.
And I'm Jonathan Evans. You are listening to As It Is from VOA Learning English. The United States is one of the world's leading agricultural powers. But few Americans are farmers. Agriculture reporter Bob Doty tells us how Maryland is helping new farmers.
One recent study showed just 2% of the population with a job in agriculture. Yet small farms seem to be appearing in many areas to meet a growing demand for locally produced food. The people operating these farms often have little or no experience in farming. Mark Mills once worked as a pastry chef. He decided to leave his secure job and turn to farming. He says his decision was based on two things: a strong interest in agriculture and his ignorance about what it takes to be a farmer. Mark Mills was a history major in college. All he knows about producing food comes from growing plants in his home garden and 26 years of working in restaurants. So why did he become a farmer?
Well, it's beautiful. Why wouldn't you want to come to work here? My own boss. But really, it's my love of food.
In recent years, many Americans have developed a taste for fresh, locally grown fruits and vegetables. The number of farmers' markets has increased over 50% in the past 10 years. Federal, state, and local governments believe now is the time to create jobs and new businesses. Mark Mills was one of four people accepted in the new Farmer Pilot Project in Montgomery County, Maryland. Sarah Miller works with the local Department of Economic Development. She says the program has worked better than many people expected.
Boy, we didn't even know how many we would get. We thought maybe one or two would be great, but I don't think that we expected four.
The project provides the new farmers with specialized business training, like marketing and business planning.
They provided the connection with the landowner so that I could actually have the land to farm on, which is key. Then certainly they provided the financing for the deer fence and the irrigation, some basic things to get going.
The program links the new farmer with an experienced one. For Mark Mills, that person is Woody Woodroof. He works at the Red Wiggler Farm in Maryland.
The big thing to work with him on now is season extension, helping him to do the things that'll allow him to harvest crops deeper into the fall and early winter.
Mr. Mills' first year in farming was successful. He produced about 450 kilograms of turnips, 90 kilograms of carrots, and 130 kilograms of green leafy vegetables. The hardest part was not growing the crops, he says. The problem has been selling them. Mr. Mills says his farm probably lost more money than it earned. Luckily, his wife has a non-farm job and can provide financial support, at least for now. Experts say many new farmers need to support themselves with another source of income. I'm Bob Doty.
And that's our program for today. Be sure to tune in tomorrow for another edition of As It Is. I'm Jonathan Evans. Thank you for listening.
Words and Their Stories is next, followed by People in America. You can read and listen to our programs and download MP3s at learningenglish.voanews.com. You can learn with us on Facebook, Twitter, and YouTube at VOA Learning English.
Now the VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories.
From birth to death, the word kick has been given an important part in expressing human experience. The proud and happy mother feels the first signs of life kicking inside her womb. And that same life, many years later, comes to its end in a widely used expression, to kick the bucket, meaning to die. The expression to kick the bucket is almost 200 years old. One belief is that it started when an English stableman committed suicide by hanging himself while standing on a pail or bucket. He put a rope around his neck and tied it to a beam in the ceiling, and then kicked the bucket away from under him. After a while, to die in any way was called kicking the bucket. Another old expression that comes from England is to kick over the traces, meaning to resist the commands of one's parents, or to oppose or reject authority. Traces were the chains that held a horse or mule to a wagon or plow. Sometimes an animal rebelled and kicked over the traces. The word kick sometimes is used to describe a complaint or some kind of dissatisfaction. Workers, for example, kick about long hours and low pay. There are times when workers are forced to kick back some of their wages to their employers as part of their job. This kickback is illegal. So is another kind of kickback, a secret payment made by a supplier to an official who buys supplies for a government or company. Kick around is a phrase that is heard often in American English. A person who is kicked around is someone who is treated badly. Usually, he is not really being kicked by somebody's foot. He is just not being treated with the respect that all of us want. A person who has kicked around for most of his life is someone who has spent his life moving from place to place. In this case, kicking around means moving often from one place to another. Kick around has a third meaning when you use it with the word idea. When you kick around an idea, you are giving that idea some thought. There is no physical action when you kick a person upstairs, although the pain can be as strong. You kick a person upstairs by removing him from an important job and giving him a job that sounds more important, but really is not. Still another meaning of the word kick is to free oneself of a bad habit, such as smoking cigarettes. Health campaigns urge smokers to kick the habit.
This VOA Special English Program, Words and Their Stories, was written by Marilyn Cristiano. Morris Joyce was the narrator. I'm Shirley Griffith.
I'm Sarah Long. And I'm Steve Ember with the VOA Special English Program, People in America. Today we tell about one of the world's greatest musicians, violinist Isaac Stern.
Isaac Stern was more than a great violin player. He was one of the most honored musicians in the world. He was an international cultural ambassador. He was a major supporter of the arts in America and in other countries. He was a teacher and activist. For more than 60 years, Mr. Stern performed excellent music. He performed in concerts around the world and on recordings. He played with major orchestras and in small groups. Here he plays Sergei Prokofiev's Violin Concerto Opus 19 with the New York Philharmonic Orchestra.
Isaac Stern was born in 1920 in what is now Ukraine. His parents moved to San Francisco, California, the following year. His mother began teaching Isaac the piano when he was 6 years old. He began taking violin lessons after hearing a friend play the instrument. Later, he began studying music at the San Francisco Conservatory. He progressed quickly. When he was 16, he played with the San Francisco Symphony Orchestra. The next year, he performed in New York City and was praised by music critics.
During World War II, Mr. Stern played for thousands of American soldiers. It was the first time many of them had heard classical music. After the war, he was the first American violinist to perform in concert in the Soviet Union. Later, he declared that he would not perform there again until artists had more freedom to leave the country. Mr. Stern had a strong connection to Israel. He supported young musicians and cultural organizations there. He performed in Israel many times, including during the Persian Gulf War in 1991.
Isaac Stern became one of the busiest musicians of his day. He played more than 100 concerts a year. He also became one of the most recorded musicians in history. This recording is Ludwig van Beethoven's Romance in F Major, Opus 50. Mr. Stern performs with the Franz Liszt Chamber Orchestra.
Carnegie Hall in New York City is one of the most famous places for the performance of classical music. All of the world's best musicians have played there. In 1960, there were plans to tear down Carnegie Hall and build a tall office building in its place. Mr. Stern organized a committee of citizens, politicians, and artists to oppose the plan. He successfully led the effort to save Carnegie Hall. Then he became president of the newly established Carnegie Hall Corporation. He held that office for 40 years. In recent years, he gave a series of classes for young musicians at Carnegie Hall. Isaac Stern also supported artistic development and freedom. He was an advisor when the National Endowment for the Arts was established. This is the government agency that supports the arts in America.
In 1979, Isaac Stern visited China. He met with Chinese musicians and students. He taught them about classical Western music. His visit was made into a film. It is called From Mao to Mozart, Isaac Stern in China. It won an Academy Award for Best Documentary Film. Mr. Stern loved to play music by many different composers. He found the works of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart to be among the most difficult. Here he plays Mozart's Adagio for violin and orchestra with the Franz Liszt Chamber Orchestra.
In 1984, Isaac Stern received the Kennedy Center Honors Award for his gifts to American culture through music. He expressed his thoughts about the part that music plays in life. He said he believed that music makes life better for everyone, especially children. He said music is an important part of a civilized life. He said people need music as much as they need bread. Mr. Stern supported and guided younger classical musicians. They include violinists Itzhak Perlman and Pinchas Zukerman, cellist Yo-Yo Ma, and pianist Yefim Bronfman. Isaac Stern died in 2001 at the age of 81. He was a major influence on music in the 20th century. He leaves the world richer with his many recordings. This one is Humoresque by Antonin Dvorak, performed with the Columbia Symphony Orchestra.
This Special English program was written by Shelley Gullist. It was produced by Katie Weaver. Our studio engineer was Max Carroll. I'm Steve Ember.
And I'm Sarah Long. Join us again next week for another People in America program on the Voice of America.